Invisible Fence brand has helped over 2 million pets enjoy more freedom in the yard so owners can relax, knowing their pets won't run away or get into trouble. Guaranteed. Our Boundary Plus yard systems give pets up to 30% more yard space and even have a patented safety feature that leaves no room for escape. We provide expert installation plus four-step professional pet training. To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com or call 1-800-578-3647.
Good morning!
Crib Live Radio presents the Morning Sports Report.
And this is my wake-up show. I'll be coming at you every morning. About this time, hoping to make your experience the best available in this price range.
An update and preview of everything going on in Pittsburgh sports. Now the Morning Sports Report. Trib Total Media. See what's next.
The Pittsburgh Steelers won the division last year. That being the AFC North. Didn't matter much. A week later, the Ravens had taken them out in the game that really mattered. So the St. Louis Cardinals capture for the third straight year, Gee, the Central. Does it matter? Baseball not being football, of course.
Well, sure it matters. And no matter what you do in football, you only have one game to prove yourself. In baseball, you could have bought yourself a five-game series at the least, which I think this team is very well suited to win. One-game wild card, I think, especially with the pitching of Jake Arrieta, is a game that I think they're behind the eight ball before they start. But, you know, you've had this I had this a foregone conclusion when they were nine games out in early May, and it turned out to be that way. They never got any closer than technically two games for a couple of hours. So you can say they lost it in April. You can say they lost it at the beginning of May. You know, they got to have the attitude now to go out and win this one game, and I still think this team can do some damage. I'm more afraid of the one wild card game than anything else they would face after.
Yeah, Ken, wait, hold on. I want to get this straight here. On a day where the Ravens are playing the Steelers at Heinz Field, you're leveraging the Ravens beating the Steelers at Heinz Field as a reason for optimism for the Pirates? Is that where we've gone here?
Not a reason for optimism, just a little reality that this is not the end game. Last year, the Steelers were crowing about we run the North. I think they had T-shirts printed about that, and that lasted about a week, you know, so it's just you got to put it in some perspective. I mean, the Cardinals will play either the Cubs or the Pirates in a five-game series in a week, and that will really be the thing that's lasting memory of 2015.
Well, unfortunately, the Pirates are going to finish in front of the Cubs, and then the Cubs are going to come here and have the same sort of song to sing, are they not?
Well, they might finish in front of the Cubs. That's not a done deal yet.
Yeah.
I don't think
we think they will.
They've
got to win two out of three over the Reds, which...
No, they just got to win one game.
They're going to win one.
One game, and they're in.
Oh, one, and they're in?
Yep.
Okay, because the Cubs, if they win today, are 94.
Magic number's two, right?
They'd be two out if the Cubs win today.
Okay, but if they tie, they win the tiebreaker, right? The Cubs. So if the Cubs sweep, if the Cubs win out, they win 97 games. The Pirates have to win 98, don't they?
Tim Neverett said one they have to win one on the radio last night.
Well, I just, you know, I don't trust Neverett. He thought
yeah, here we go again.
Fought his way to the batting title last year.
Yeah, I guess you're right. They could still tie.
Just kick that hornet's nest.
Either way, the Pirates. If the Pirates win at least two or three, they're in. And I believe that's what it is. But, you know, this one-game wild card and the whole situation, it's the year three of it. I think maybe more than anything, Hurdle built it up as this was the year to chase the division. As he said last night after the game, plan A is now off the board. It feels like a letdown because they've built it up to be such a big thing. And I mean, it is, but then again, the two wild card winners last year went to the World Series, so it is and it isn't. You just have to get hot at the right time, which is next Wednesday, perhaps PNC Park.
Against Jake Arrieta, so
against
good luck
Jake
with that. So,
well,
hey, look, they did try to go for it last night, didn't they? They basically put out the same lineup from game one to game two.
So no Florimond at shortstop. I thought maybe that was coming.
No Stewart at catcher, right? Didn't they go with Cervelli?
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's Cervelli with the second game, two games
Stewart
in a row
pinch
for the catch.
Hit and hit a double.
Right. You know, so it's not like they didn't try for the division.
They blew this Monday night. I mean, you really think, how many times have the Cardinals been swept this year? I didn't expect them to win three, but you hope they could have won two and make the weekend count. And they had the golden opportunity Monday night. We all knew the Morton game was probably going to be the one we didn't like the matchup, although that was originally against Waka. At least you get them. You let a turd like Lyons, who they hadn't won a game that he had been in, set you on your ear. And it's much easier to pitch when you have a 6-0 lead, I understand. But it's not so much that Morton peed to bed again. It's that they didn't do anything against this bum.
Yeah, who hadn't been pitching much here in September.
No, you think you get a break because Martinez goes on the DL and this guy pitches and you let him go through the minimum amount of hitters.
Well, is that true? Did they blow this Monday night? Or was it blown, as you say, guy in April? Or was it blown and getting swept by the Brewers in two different series?
Yeah, I mean, mathematically, you can take any one of those. I mean, teams are going to have bad months. If they were a little bit better in April and not quite as good in June and July, then, you know, it would have been a more normal balance of wins and losses. But it would have been the same thing. The Cardinals have proven with all they've had to put, you know, Andrew McCutchen put it best. You got a man up and say they're the better team. They're the better team. They've been the better team all year, and they're ending up the better team. And they're the better team with a lot of their key players missing a lot of key time. That's the reality of the whole thing.
In my opinion, I look at the losses against the lesser teams in the division, the combined records against the Brewers and the Reds. They did not take advantage of those teams enough to make up the difference that the Cardinals had built. So I look at that flaw. If you're going to look at a season overall flaw, that's it.
It is the best division in baseball, and they held their own against the Cubs and the Cardinals for the most part. It wasn't an embarrassing record. The Reds really, and thank them for putting up such stiff opposition too. You know, they roll over and die, but they'll come in here this weekend, and Aroldis Chapman will pitch 27 innings.
Yeah. Well, to that point, this is inarguably the toughest division in baseball because of the records, although, you know, the Brewers and the Reds are two of the worst teams in baseball by their records, probably because they played in this division. But when you look at who's going to win Manager of the Year, will it be Mike Matheny? Will it be, you know, will it be a situation where...
Terry Collins?
Terry Collins of the Mets, right, starts to...
Or Jagoff of the Week from last week, Joe Maddon?
I don't know about Maddon. I guess he could.
Yeah,
it's
no, I think
first
so.
Time, long time for the Cubs.
I think the Cubs are a year ahead of where I thought they'd be.
Yeah, I go Matheny 1, Maddon 2, Collins 3, Hurdle 4.
Hurdle 4th on that. That's
yeah.
Interesting.
Why? Would you have him higher?
I guess I would have. I mean.
Well, who from those three should he be in front of?
Matheny dealt with so many injuries, and they won 100, so it's tough to not put him 1
Maybe
or
in front
2.
Of Maddon. He won more games than Maddon. And he didn't get the benefit of a pitcher with historic numbers that really had nothing to do with his managing. He just got lucky. They thought John Lester was going to be the guy to push them over the top, and Arrieta came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and as far as the Mets go, like the Pirates beat the Mets handily this year in head-to-head series. I don't know if that should matter. I mean, they had a great story. They weren't the team the Pirates were, so therefore why should Terry Collins get as much love? I guess I haven't followed the Mets as closely.
I think a lot of winning Manager of the Year is what you have done to lead a team to beyond at a level of expectation that is reasonable coming into the season. And I think the Pirates getting another wild card is not beyond reason of expectation. For some, it's below what people expected or hoped for. Winning that division is beyond
I think it's the amount of wins, Tim, that would push it. I think they've won more games than I expected them to win. Just wasn't enough to win the division.
Yeah, I sure as hell didn't expect the Mets to win the East. I know that. So that's part of the reason I would put Collins in front of Hurdle. But now we're talking about third versus fourth, and that's not much of a worthy debate.
The Cardinals celebrating with popping the champagne and everything at the visiting clubhouse second year in a row because the Giants did that, of course, after the wild card game. But it seemed like they gave some proper credit to the Pirates. It took them this long to clinch it, as the GM said. You had to get 100 wins before you even celebrate. That says a lot, end quote, about the division and the two teams. So I don't think they were like the Cardinals were rubbing it in or overreacting. I don't mean to say that as like the way we started the program.
No, I think they were very classy on the field.
Yeah.
They just didn't look much different than the congratulations at the end of a regular win.
And all the adversity they did face, they've got to be feeling like, hell of a job, but I do wonder how nervous they are to play either of these two teams.
Well, can you imagine the difference last night had they won Monday night? I mean, it would have been down to one game. You don't think they would have been – they might not have been as confident or as easy going. They'd have been down to one game, and they got Tyler Lyons on the mound.
Right.
You know, how different might that game have gone just based on that scenario? It would have been the closest the Pirates had been since opening day.
And, of course, Charlie Morton is a part of this story. He called it heartbreaking afterwards. That ended up guy was, as you said, it wasn't the whole story because they couldn't hit Lions, but that's part of the story. And he's been
bad
here for
a month. The first pitch in a game gets roped for a triple. I mean, you pretty much knew from one pitch that he didn't have it. And, although he's so up and down. He, you know, one inning he looks like Sandy Koufax, and next inning he looks like Sandy Duncan. Or I couldn't think of another Sandy. You know.
I don't know. He's 9-9 this year.
Sandy Duncan had a wicked cutter.
I'm glad you guys don't know who that is. I thought I might really be dating myself.
Peter Pan, are you kidding me?
But his
Wheat Thins.
Yeah,
Wheatins.
Wheat. Why do you say it that way?
Wheatins.
What way?
Wheat. Wheatins.
Did Morton have a
sorry,
terrible
Ken, we're
year,
just over here by
year?
Ourselves.
I know, I got you. I got you.
I watched the one last night I had never seen before, where they found out that Lois had done porn.
Oh, that was magnificent.
Yeah, I had never seen that one.
This is how you spend your evenings after the Pirates lose.
This is how we spend our days after we come on the air and talk about it.
That's exactly right. Well, I mean, yesterday Morton was bad. His previous couple starts were equally as bad. So this is like three in a row, really, right?
Well,
the one in Colorado they got away with.
If they do survive the wild card game, I think they got to have a four-man rotation going forward. Locke and Morton don't start in the postseason if I'm managing this team. It's got to be, you know, Cole Liriano, Happ, and Burnett, and that's probably the order I would pitch them in.
I would agree with that. And then you get into what about Charlie Morton next year? I mean, he's under contract.
Well, look, there's nothing wrong with a 500 pitcher as the fifth guy in your staff. If he's your second or third starter, then he's you know, if they have Liriano, Cole, and could somehow keep Happ, and you work one of the younger guys into the rotation, maybe Worley comes back, you know, maybe one of the younger guys makes the team out of spring training, and Morton's your fifth starter. I think what I don't want to see is Morton and Locke in the rotation next year.
Yeah,
if it's not Happ, then who is it going to be? That's the question that I come back to, because it's going to be another guy who's of Hap's ilk. They're going to acquire him in the offseason. We're going to go, eh. And he's going to be a reclamation project, and you're going to hope that he turns out as well as Happ did. Well, you've already got the guy that's turned out well, so why not keep him?
Right.
You know, why not make the effort to keep him?
How much money did
Volquez
get
last year? Buy back into your own
investment
is what I'm saying.
What did Volquez get when he left here?
Volquez got $10 million. Over 2 years? I got to check that. It was not egregious, no. I'll look it up. But
I mean, Cole, Liriano, and then if you were to keep Happ, you still have to find one spot before you get to Morton until Glasnow is ready to come up in June.
Yeah.
Unless they break camp with Glasnow, which to me is unlikely.
Two years, $20 million.
Okay. All right.
You follow me, Ken?
I got you.
You know, I mean, we could hope that they're going to bring Glasnow up from Bradenton when they break camp, but I don't think that's going to be the case. So
no.
Now you're already talking about Morton as your number four then and somebody else as your five until they're ready to go to Glasnow. So you can try to find yet another reclamation project that works out in your favor. Like, you know, Burnett twice and Volquez, Liriano, Happ when they got him.
Yeah.
You know, all these guys, Mark Melanson, everybody that Ray Searidge touches turns to gold except James McDonald. I throw that in as the caveat all the time just to keep you happy now.
Thank you.
But they've got Happ, and that one worked out. Why not just keep him? And then if you want to dabble in the free agent market and get somebody else bargain basement that you can experiment again to be the fifth after Morton, one of the two can go if it doesn't work out when Glasnow's ready to come up.
Morton's making $8 million next year, and then there's a team option for 2017, so they're paying him enough money that he probably will be here, right, based on the finances, unless they can trade him, but this is not the great high water mark to be trading ground Chuck.
No, and I think, like I said, you know, he's 500. I believe the games that he has started, they're over 500. I mean, look, he hasn't had a good stretch here, and he's not the guy you want out there in a crucial game. But he's not a guy to just toss away either. There's a lot worse guys out there for fourth or fifth. You know, there were years where he would have been your ace. Here, and I'm not exaggerating. That's, you know.
Well, it is a shame. You know, yesterday after the first game, and I know, Tim, you were over there and talked to Garrett Cole. Cole showed up. You get the grand slam. I'm looking ahead to matchups against the Cardinals and the Braves in the last series, and, you know, they're going to face Julio Teheran and Shelby Miller, who's a former Cardinal. And it was possible, if you had won last night, that St. Louis would have lost 2 of 3 in the weekend. You know, it's possible. Not likely, maybe, but I was starting to, at the end of September, starting to believe in meaningful September baseball.
Oh, great. I'm glad it got to September 30th before you changed your mind.
And then, of course, it was back out in time for October.
Now you've got meaningless October baseball, and maybe meaningless all the way up until the eighth inning or so against Chicago in the wild card game. But when you hear Cole afterwards say, I didn't deserve the win, Cervelli did, not just for his bat but for his glove. He called the right game and got me through this. I didn't have much today. Does that inspire a lot of confidence for him going up against Jake Arrieta?
I guess it's true because he was not missing many bats, right? I mean, that's the, I don't know if that's a telltale sign with him.
No, Hurdle said he didn't have his best stuff. He didn't have the explosion on the fastball. And I mean,
two strikeouts.
Would you have rather have had him be completely dominant this game and expected two games in a row? You don't expect him to have two off games around you. Look at what he's done in September again. 4-0 in September, two wins against the Cardinals, two games against the Cubs, one of which won and one of which he got no decision because a goofball threw two wild pitches, which kept him from being a 20-game winner.
Soria.
So, I mean, he was huge in September. Again, he's 12-2 lifetime in September.
The two pitches that he ended up yielding runs on, as it was described somewhere on Twitter, I can't remember which writer put it out there, but one of the writers said, Gerrit Cole just threw an 87-mile-an-hour ... and Matt Carpenter hit it into the river 435 feet. Yeah, I don't know what that was, and I forgot to ask him afterwards, but the other one that just jumped out at me was the Hayward single through the middle when he had a runner on third base. It's 3-2, and he throws a curveball, and it was just kind of a get-me-over curveball, and Hayward slapped it right through. Overpower him. Throw your best in that situation. You need a strikeout there because you've got the runner on third base, so just strike him out.
He had a lot of two-strike counts where he put balls in play or pitched it, you know, close enough to the zone where guys put it in play. Four outs most of the time, but, yeah, it almost seemed like he got away with it yesterday.
Well, I'll say this. I like his mentality better than anybody else's, even if it's, you know, he's really got a bull. You know, you look at guys like Locke and Morton, and they just always seem to have such a shaky confidence. They just don't appear to be, even when they're having success, it's almost like they're waiting for something to happen. This guy, you know, wants to take the bull by the horns. He wants the opportunity. He wants to go out there. He, you know, he's so intense sometimes when you look at him, it's like, relax a little bit. You're not even pitching tonight. That's what you're going to have to go with.
I'd like some of the emailers to get in on that Hap thing that you brought up, Ken, because that to me is a very intriguing discussion. I don't want to fast forward too far into next year before they even lose the wild card game against Arrieta, but you know, if you're looking at the first two guys and you're a perennial playoff contender now and your team blows off the opportunity to keep a guy that it brought in and it worked out just for the sake of saving a few bucks to get a reasonable facsimile that may or may not work out, that is not, to me, winning management structure. And I don't want to get them in trouble for something that they haven't done yet, but it's concerning to me that it would be thought of as, you know, especially what if they do win? Say they win the wild card and they go into the division series, and it's a really good start in the division series too. Or they end up doing something in the playoffs and he's a part of it. You're just going to let him go because you can? I mean, that's the old Pirate way of thinking. Oh, good, let him go because we don't have to pay him. We'll find a cheaper version of him. I don't know if we're going to be able to find a cheaper version of him that works out as well as this has.
Well, they're hoping Tyone and Glasnow are the cheaper versions, right? I mean, that's why they let Volquez go last year, and these guys weren't healthy. I think Volquez was good. I mean, some people will rip him for the wild card game, but, that, I mean,
okay, that sounds
him.
Good, but then, again, do you buy for a minute that they will bring one or either of them up from Bradenton?
No.
Or do you have to wait until June and get by with Vanimal and Locke and Morton again? Like, you do not want to come out after a third straight playoff season and open the year with Locke and Worley and Morton as your, in whatever order, 3-5.
You'd be sitting there at 500 or worse.
They're
going to
piss away April and May again, just like you did this year, for different reasons.
I don't want Locke or Morton. Personally, I mean,
probably going to be stuck with one of them, and I get that because of what Guy said. I mean, you're going to get down to your fifth starter. Not a lot of people have a good fifth starter. You just try to get by on that day when they pitch, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, then put yourself in a position where you've got a young guy that you think could be good and Hap, who you brought in, acquired, and he ended up being a good acquisition. He's making 6.7 this year, and what are we thinking for next year?
10,
God,
12.
Yeah, and probably 3 or 4 years, too. Which that's the trouble. How much term does Hap want?
And you're already talking about giving up money for Walker, right? You're not going to bother with that, so they're going to non-tender him or trade him. So you're going to lose salary there. Who knows what you think they're going to gain salary in the exchange for Pedro Alvarez at first base? No, probably not. They'll lose salary there. Got to spend something somewhere.
Is Hap the guy to put your cash into, though? Even
well,
if they
that,
do
that,
sign
what if
him?
He got 2-10, 2-20 like Edison Volquez at the age of 32?
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, I'd take that in a heartbeat.
Absolutely, yeah. which is why I'm stunned they didn't get Volquez from last year, to be honest.
But you may be right, Ken. Anything beyond two, you get nervous about a guy who's been kind of a journeyman. I mean, you know, has this stretch been – what if he starts next year back to the J-Hap we've seen before?
Exactly.
Is this just a, you know, you're gambling a little bit here? I mean, I want to sign him based on the alternatives. But, I mean, what if you do sign him to a three-year, 35 mil? What did they give Liriano, 36 mil?
339.
What if they give him something in that ballpark figure and he has a good first half next year and the other 2.5 years he stinks?
Or what if you do 2 and 24? You overpay maybe.
You overpay him to get rid of a year.
Exactly.
I'd rather do that.
Morton will probably be in there for the first half of the year at minimum,
until
Glasnow gets up there.
I think he'll be in there, period.
Yeah. Okay. So
you want to be optimistic and say that they're going to bring up one of them? You're wildly optimistic if you think they're going to bring up both of them.
Not to start the year. I'm
or
talking
optimistic
about
in
June.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I mean, by June, you could have both Glasnow and Tyone ready. Maybe.
Both Glasnow and Tyone ready to go out of camp, out of spring training, and have Morton and just Locke doesn't make the team. I mean, in theory, you could do that. But I don't know. I mean,
who's the other right-hander down there, guy that we talked to in spring training? What's
Kingham?
His name?
Kingham.
Yeah, Kingham. Yeah. What's his deal now?
They were all hurt, right?
Yeah.
You're right. So
he had
Kingham's
Tommy John. I don't think he's ready till June.
Good God!
Can't remember what month he had it.
I mean, that's really a lost story this year. It's buried anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's
devastating. That,
if those three guys had a healthy year, you might have a better chance of seeing one of them come out of spring training. I mean, those guys. You know, I don't know that, as Tim mentioned earlier in the season, that caused a change in what they had to do at the trade deadline. They couldn't use any of those guys if they wanted to as trade bait to go after a bigger name. And
right.
And it was actually, it's worked out well. They didn't have to.
They got the best pitcher available.
Yeah, they got the best pitcher by default because of people working with them. But
you can email the show sports.tribweb.com. Tim Benz, Guy Junker, Ken Laird, Josh Taylor along as our producer extraordinaire. It's the morning show brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand, where you know by now you get a free in-home consultation just to visit InvisibleFence.com. Schedule one today, helping over 2 million pet owners enjoying more freedom by having their pets have more freedom in their yard, relaxing, not worrying about them getting out of the facility. And Duffy's Beer, of course, also in Pleasant Hills, online at Duffy'sBeer.com. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, and Tim Benz's favorite, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs, including for tonight's game. Victober begins, and the debut tonight of Michael Vick, the Steelers' backup quarterback, against the Ravens. So the big rivalry game, maybe not the best rivalry in sports anymore, especially with an 0-3 Ravens team coming in here, guys. But a lot of intrigue. I do wonder about is this good for ratings tonight for NFL Network? Will people be turning on the sets across the country to see what Mike Vick's got left in the tank?
Hold on. We had that big blow-up about the ratings and who was watching for the Thursday night opener. You're telling me that everybody was going to turn in to watch Tom Brady, but nobody would have tuned in to watch Ben Roethlisberger, and now
well, that was
watch
Jimmy
Michael
Garoppolo. Vick. This is a household name now. This is the first pick in the 0-1 draft. This is
and a polarizing figure for non-football reasons.
No, I think that Ben Roethlisberger brings as many eyeballs to the sets as Michael Vick does. I think if we're going to use the same mentality for that argument, we should use it for this argument.
Vick's a figure. He's a Tebow-esque guy, though. You know, if he's playing, he is going to get some people tuning in just who maybe would not have.
Well, I don't know.
It's going to be a worse game.
Look at the ratings for when he played with the Eagles or when he played for the Jets. Was he still moving the needle, you think, the way you're suggesting?
Probably not.
I mean, did people flock to the TVs to see Michael Vick play for the Jets?
Okay, no. I guess they didn't, but it's the only show in town tonight. It's a Thursday night lone game on the slate.
Well, if I'm an average football fan, I want to see Ben Roethlisberger play, and I want to see Baltimore 2-1 or 3-0. I don't want to see them 0-3 with Flacco struggling and the Steelers playing their backup quarterback, even if it is Michael Vick. So to answer your question, no, I don't think it's good for ratings.
Okay. Are the Steelers going to be able to manage it? That's the big question tonight. Can they get Vic, and how do they need Vic to play to win this game tonight? Is he game manager Mike Vick, or is he you be who you are Mike Vick? We need you to run the ball every now and then. We need you to roll out on bootlegs and waggles and take some chances, throw a couple bombs to Antonio Brown. I wonder what their game plan is for this guy tonight.
I think it's everything short, everything long, nothing in the middle.
No Heath Miller?
Very little Heath Miller. Well, that could be short, though. You know, I mean, that could be like 4 yards in the air. So there could be Heath, but really short, not Heath at the sticks on a second and 12.
I would agree with that. I would think get the ball out quick is that's kind of their MO anyway with Ben. So that's one way they could have some carryover from Roethlisberger to Vic, just bubble screens all over, right, and checkdowns to Le'Veon Bell.
Yes, I do think that's going to be a huge part of the game plan. And I think anything where they want to try to get a chunk play, they'll go up top to like Hayward Bay or hope that Brown beats the coverage down the field.
The Ravens guy, I'm sure, will be testing them, right? They're going to dare him to beat them deep, which he still has a pretty good deep ball, as we saw in the preseason. You know,
his arm has always been strong and still is, and his arm has always been less than accurate, and it still is. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Their playbook, I think you guys are right on what they'll run, and I think this is a huge night for the offensive line to pull it together because it's going to be a simplified playbook. They're not going to have everything in our – and this game will be about execution, not about pulling out all the stops or trying to trick them with something they haven't shown on tape this year. They had 2 days to practice with him as the starter. There's a lot of adjustments to be made. He's given up 4 or 5 inches of height to Ben Roethlisberger, so I think he'll be moving a lot to throw, not standing still back there to buy himself some visibility and some time. And I think that the pressure tonight's more on the offensive line than it is on Vic or anybody else. They have to Vince Lombardi it. 6 plays, execute them all perfectly, and you'll win.
And they are going up against a shitty secondary, just a bad secondary right now. So from that standpoint, it's one of the few times I've looked at this game and said that's a break for the Steelers. I think it's an unfortunate thing for them that they got to do this on a Thursday night. I think it's an unfortunate thing for them that they got to do this week before Martavis Bryant comes back. You know, all those kind of breaks in the calendar where you have the extra couple days for this weekend once they're done with the Ravens, you know, that would have benefited them greatly if for whatever reason Roethlisberger should have gone down in this game as opposed to last week. They got some bad luck in that regard. One area where they got good luck, though, is the Ravens secondary is just putrid. Now, the way it's been picked apart the last 2 weeks is borderline embarrassing.
That has to be Terrell Suggs related, right?
To a degree, I'm sure, because one hand washes the other, as defensive coordinators always say when it comes to coverage versus pressure. He's not there to provide pressure, and the secondary has to cover longer. They're not good enough to cover that extra half second longer.
A couple stories about Vic. There was one written by Dan Pompey at Bleacher Report, real in-depth story on Vic, and he agreed with what you guys are saying, paring the playbook down. They've told him from 100 plays to 50. Our Mark Cabali in the Trib today talked about Vic saying, I had to eliminate plays I'm not comfortable with. As of now, we had a ton of them. This all, though, gets back to what we were discussing yesterday. Was this a good sign? I guess when Pompey listed all the other quarterbacks that were signed as free agents at the time where Vic was still unsigned. Castle, Fitzpatrick, Flynn, Grossman, Josh Johnson, Kafka, Case Keenum, Thad Lewis, Lindley, Schaub, Tyrod Taylor, Joe Webb, and Christian Ponder. But, you know, it's like Vic might be the better quarterback of all those guys, but he's so different style-wise that it makes this short week even worse.
That's the exact thing I said yesterday, is that even though I don't like the guy and I don't like him for the off-the-field stuff, didn't like the signing for the off-the-field stuff, they had to make the move that they did because when Gradkowski went down, he was the best QB available. But he is not a good fit. Just because he was the best talent available doesn't make him a good fit.
He's not a good backup fit anywhere, really, right? He's going to be so different no matter who.
Well, especially because from people I've talked to over there, they are absolutely paranoid, maybe to the point of even getting in Vic's head, about him running because they don't want him to get hurt because they have to go to Landry Jones, who's their own mistake.
Right. Well, save us from Landry.
The one thing I like about Vic's attitude about this is, you know, a lot of times, I mean, fans and the media probably think more alike than the actual players do. Maybe the media with a little more realism sometimes. But I don't know about you guys. I've always found it disappointing when guys won't at least embrace some of the ideas that we have, or they don't know they live in such a bubble. They talk about, they're not even worried about the next play or the next game or the next at bat. He at least has talked about this is probably his last chance to be a starter in the NFL during this injury. He is at least, and I think that means something.
I think he's at least embraced that. He knows he's not going to – this could be it. He didn't even know if he was going to be in the league this year until the Steelers threw him a lifeline, and he certainly probably didn't expect to start any games with as healthy as Ben's been the last couple of years. I think that's a positive.
This is the first time we've seen Todd Haley have to work with a quarterback that's not Ben Roethlisberger. It's a total unknown. He's had the great fortune of Ben staying healthy for every game the last 2 years, or partly to his credit, in which we were crediting him as recently as last week, right before Ben ironically went down with the injury.
Because he got Ben to get the ball out of his hands more quickly.
Right. But now how good is Todd Haley as a play caller when it comes to, on a short week, trying to get Vic comfortable? I have no idea how to answer that. He talked about Kurt Warner and
Matt Leinart.
Matt Leinart back in Arizona. So I guess he's dealt with this before.
But Kurt Warner was the perfect backup quarterback to come in and be able to diagnose reads, the line of scrimmage, get the offense assimilated in his head, just look things over, know where the open guy was going to be. That's never been a strong suit for Vic. Vic's strongest suit has been his athleticism and his deep arm capability. That's it. And they don't want him to run, so they're taking that off the page basically for him anyway because they're paranoid about their own bad draft mistake, Landry Jones having to come in and quarterback the team.
Well, I think the other thing to consider too is when you talk about a backup quarterback, perhaps the most important thing for any backup quarterback is what does he have to work with around him. This is this group of talent, whether you're talking tight end, wide receivers, running backs, is so much better than the junk he had with the Jets last year that, you know, they have to elevate too and help him out. And
yeah.
He can't put all of this on his back, but when you've got, you know, he should be frothing at the mouth. This might be the best group of offensive players he's ever played with in this league.
Including Antonio Brown just on his by himself. Oh, you know.
Yeah, Brown, Heath Miller, I mean, you know, the other receivers and two good running backs. I mean,
now there was one play last week in the Rams game where he threw to Brown on a slant and shouldn't have thrown it, and it was almost picked off. I don't know if you remember
should
that play I'm talking
off.
About.
Yes.
Yeah. But that's the danger, right? Like he
the
should
one Brown
Antonio.
Caught or was it incomplete?
The incomplete one.
Incomplete.
That was his only incomplete pass of the game.
That's right. He was 5 of 6. I'm sure he'll throw to Brown 10 times tonight. He probably should.
That's a crutch I'd rely on.
But you can't have what you had in that case last week either, where you're totally forcing it if it's not there. I don't know, but Brown sort of stopped on that route. Maybe they were not on the same page. You're going to have some of that tonight. He's got to cut down on the mistakes and play turnover free. And that's another cliche, but it's true too. If they can just take care of the ball, I do feel good about them coming out with a win tonight. I would say good about it, but I think it's
possible.
I was going to
say, you talked yourself into this because you were going Ravens earlier in the week.
I was, and I...
See, I'm going the other way. My first blush was to take the Steelers because I was so close to that Ravens loss, and now I'm going to the Ravens because I have no idea what to expect from this offense. And I know what Flacco's done against better Steeler defenses than this at that stadium.
They're 1-5 against the Ravens without Roethlisberger, so... Although they've all been tight.
Right.
In fact, every one of them, I think, except one, has been decided by a field goal.
Most of those games turns into Joe Flacco leading the Ravens down the field against the Steeler defense in the last 2 minutes to win the game.
Well, and the one thing to think about the Ravens, too, all three of their games have been decided late. I mean, they've been, you know.
And they've lost them.
Yeah, they have. But
here was the question on NFL Network this morning. Of these following six skill position players, who is going to have the bigger night? Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, Steve Smith, Justin Forsett, Michael Vick, or Joe Flacco. And when I think about those guys, I don't see Forsett running on them.
No, he's the first one I would cross off.
Just because Baltimore's line's been a mess. You're right, Tim. Flacco is good. We know what he is. But if he has no time to throw, maybe he and Steve Smith have the better numbers tonight. I think that's possible. But in the end, I look at Antonio Brown and that secondary that you said accurately. The Ravens' secondary is a mess, and I still think he's got a big game tonight, even if Vic's a quarterback. So I'm going to go with Antonio Brown as the star of the night, and they rely on their number one, and they come out of there with a win.
I'm going to go with Le'Veon because I think he's going to feel safer throwing shorter more often than he will to Brown, as much as Brown abuses a crutch. It's Bell's second game back. I think he needed to get some sea legs about him last week. He said he wasn't rusty, but I think there was a little rust there. If I had to pick one guy out of that group, I'd go Bell or Flacco if I'm going Ravens.
Okay.
Flacco's due for his quarterback rating for the year is only like 82.
Was Steve Smith a candidate there?
Yes, he was.
All right, I'll go Steve Smith.
he's amazing. But old guy, short week, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't blow him off because he's good every week. He's just a gamer.
I don't know where else Flacco. Yes, that's why he could be like a a volume scorer, a bad scorer, sorry guy on an NBA team. You know, one of those kind of players that you could just count on.
Oh, I didn't know what you were sorry and guy for. I had to think about what you do.
You know, but you know what I'm saying, right? I mean, bad NBA teams have guys who have inflated point totals. You know that this guy could get Kevin Love on the Minnesota Timberwolves, right? You know, there's a good example. He was leading. He would have a double double, 20-something every night because who else was going to score for him?
But think about them when they had like Ray Rice running, and they had those two Dennis Pitta, and who was the other big tight end? They had two. What was his name?
Dixon, Ed Dixon.
Oh yeah, they had those two monster tight ends. You know, Anquan Boldin is a. I mean, they had all these weapons. They had an offense that resembled. You look at them now, and who do you fear? Okay, can Steve Smith beat you by himself if that's all they got? Maybe he can. But, I mean, they certainly don't come in here. You talk about ratings. I mean, even compared to these two playing each other last year, this game doesn't have close to the luster that it did.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so tell us what you see tonight. How do the Steelers win it? Faith in Vic, and who is the player of the game of those? Bell, Brown, Steve Smith, Flacco, Vic, and Forsett by the time this game is done tonight. SportsTalk at TribWeb.com. To the mail we go here on the Duffy's.
Hey, Kent, can I just follow up on that real quick? Because I got a tweet from a guy named Andrew here, and he says to me, I think the Steelers are going to win tonight. Am I bold or just insane? You're not insane. I don't even know if you're bold. I think this game is a total toss-up.
It is.
It's a total coin toss because
it's very hard to figure out what
The Steelers are an utter unknown with Vic.
Right. I don't expect great things out of the Ravens. They've struggled. They've been in every game, though, and they're just, they were in it. They played what I think is a much better team than the Steelers at this moment in time, Cincinnati last week, and had a late lead on them and came back to get it and coughed it up. So it's not crazy to expect the Steelers to lose the game.
I want to get to your intel here in a moment, too, Tim, from last night with you and Labs, who were back at it again on Brand Z. In regards to a member of the Steelers defense.
Now, it's Brand Z. Is that just the FM translator? Is that the Brand Z, or are we talking about AM 970?
I don't know. It's like they throw something new out there every day.
It's more like World War Z.
In terms of the odds, Baltimore is the three-point favorite now. This started from a pick'em, and they've gone to a – what are we using for pick'em pork?
Two and a half.
2.5, okay. Well, most spots it's 3 that I see in Vegas. So
I think I would take 3. The half point matters to me because all these games without Roethlisberger against them have been decided by a field goal. 2.5 is not enough.
And less 2-point conversions tonight, too. That might cost you a point. Matthew, first in today on the email, he says, in regards to the Pirates, guys, I think they'll lose to Arrieta, but if they do win and get past that game, they can do some damage.
No question.
However, if you pitch Locke or Morton the rest of the way in the playoffs, you are waving the white flag. Neither of these guys should pitch again. They need to spend some more money next year, get a few players, and win the division, which I'm doubtful it'll happen. That will help them accomplish something in the playoffs. I mean, they don't need to use Locke or Morton again, right?
No. If you got all the way to the World Series, you might. I mean, let's say you play 5 games in the NLDS and then 6 more in the NLCS and you get up to a 5th or 6th game in the World Series and guys are tired or some, people expect Bob Johnson or Jim Rooker to start World Series games back in the day.
Would you bring Morton in to get a ground ball or like a poor man's shoes?
Locke wasn't on the playoff roster last year. I don't think Locke will even be on the roster.
Yeah, it's a good point. He won't. I don't know if Morton would take a bullpen roll or if that's even a good
idea. I forget how that works. They set that for the wild card game, and then they can reset it once the playoffs start, right? Each round you can reset the roster because it does get different. You don't need – how many starters do you need for how many starters would you even have on your roster for a wild card playoff game? Maybe 2?
Yeah, well, that's curious too because, I mean, Liriano's going to pitch Friday still. I guess he'd be available. Like, let's say Cole was wonky in the first inning next week, gives up 2 runs. Do you have a quick hook? Would you put Liriano in after pitching Friday night where he'd have normal rest and he'd be available for you? Or do you just have to ride with Cole and say, hope he, settles it down again because we can eat Liriano for game 1 if we get past this?
No, there is no tomorrow. But, I mean, it depends how wonky he is. You're talking about he gives up a run or 2 earlier. You're talking about he gives up 3.
Well, let's say they know, like they did yesterday, his stuff's not great. He gives up, it's 2-0 Cubs after one. Then it's 4-0 Cubs after two.
Then it doesn't matter who you bring in, the game's over.
Probably.
There is no way you win if you're down 4-0 in the second inning, Jake Arrieta. No way.
I always hate to say no way. If they get to the bullpen, if you could somehow get them out of the game, get a run off them and think it's 4-1 in the eighth or something. You know. Anyway, that's the question for next week. Sean emails, he says, to me, there are three specific games against the Cardinals, guys, where the division was lost this year. First was the 14-inning game where Pedro hit a home run to give the Pirates the lead in the 12th. With Melanson and Watson both in the bullpen, they allowed Lees to pitch, despite the fact he had a day off the next day. They had a day off. He gave up the lead, and then they lost the game in the 14th.
I believe that. I think they left 18 men on base that game.
That was early in the year, right? Three straight losses.
Three straight extra inning losses in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Sean says the other two were the lock game where everybody was begging for him to be pulled, but by then it was too late. That was the third time through the rotation game. And Sean says the Monday game, obviously, as well. Outcome of those three games, and here we are, two-game lead, Pirates up instead of being back. That sums up the season.
The Monday game will go down in history as one of the – I heard Clint Hurdle yesterday talking about that. You know, the Cardinals threw 190 pitches in that game.
190?
190 pitches, and you don't score a run. 10 walks, and you don't score a run. You have a guy – how many pitches did Happ thrown when he was taken out? 62? 56. 56 pitches, scoreless, and yet the guy gets taken out of the game. I mean, those kind of things won't happen in another decade in all of Major League Baseball, let alone in the Pirates. That's the game that, even if they would have, you know, if they could have won that game and then they would have lost last night in the exact same fashion, you're still alive, and there's just a whole different feel about everything.
Breaking sports news here from a football front. Tom Brady has been named AFC Offensive Player of the Month, thus ending the New England conspiracy theory that everybody's out to get them all the time.
Yay, let's go have a party.
Thank God.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure
I've never been so
down.
Happy to see Tom Brady win something, so now we can take that off the table. The NFL is working against us for 4 months before he gets an award. Good, I'm
now
glad.
Now we need him.
Congratulations, Tom Brady.
Yeah, get him on the jinx. Bart at Baltimore. Enemy territory. A lot of bubble screens I see tonight, guys. Vic can't read a defense, so there's no changing plays at the line of scrimmage. They just have to run, and I would hit Heath on short passes outside the numbers. That's his game plan for tonight. Bart says Todd Heap was the other good tight end the Ravens had.
Yeah.
Might have been forgetting. Were you going to say, Tim, that works for Heath?
That works for me,
I was
yes.
thinking of Dixon and Pitta together, though. But
Owen Daniels, too.
Then. Because Steelers fans stole the Heath Denver. Call from the Heap call.
Yeah, but we don't have to remember it that way, guy.
All right, from Sean. As far as the Jay Happ discussion goes, guys, they gave Morton 3 years, $21 million, based on two good halves of pitching. First half of 2012, the second half of 2013. They took a risk there. You should take an equal risk in Jay Happ. Also find it interesting they're more than happy to have paid Morton $7 million, but they're distressed about having to pay Neil Walker $8 million. Which is worth the contract that's being paid?
Who was the first example before Walker?
Morton? Morton got $7 million per year over 3 years.
I don't understand their attitude with Neil Walker at all, and I haven't, never have.
Yeah, I agree with Guy there, but the bigger, you just can't compare a pitcher to a position player in that context. It doesn't work.
Neil Walker is one of the higher paid second basemen in the league already. $7 million is not even close to the highest paid pitcher in the league, right, based on the elite pitchers and what they're getting. So you're right. It's hard to compare the two.
By the way, home runs by National League second baseman the last three seasons, as per Josh. Neil Walker, 55. Jed Jerko, 49. Matt Carpenter, 46. Brandon Phillips, 38. Just saying.
And Carpenter's not even a second baseman anymore.
I added the ones they hit this week to it.
Jeff in Illinois. Pretty sure you guys are going to see an ultra-conservative Steelers D tonight, guys, when they ask Vic not to lose the game, not unlike the game plan they used with the great Dennis Dixon a few years back. If they don't turn the ball over, they've got too many weapons not to win, in my opinion. Well, they're going to really go run pass tonight, though.
Let's think about the playbook being pared down for Roethlisberger's rookie year, and it stayed pared down most of the year, and that worked pretty well. As I recall, he's won 15 games in a row. I mean, you don't have to have a million plays. If you cut from 100 to 50, that's okay. It's all about how you run the plays, not having a bunch of them.
From Ed, I think next year is the 100% go-for-it Pirates year, guys. They need to spend all the money they have and then some. If not now, then when? Next year is the year you were holding your top draft picks for. Please don't bring Glock or Morton back. You sign Hap. Break camp with Glasnow. Tyone as well. Don't waste a single game. Please learn the lessons of the last 3 years. I would rather lose with my aces than qualify for a consolation prize wildcard game again next season.
And if they're going to do that, then be ready to, at some point, maybe before the deadline, probably before the deadline if this scenario comes up, if Glasnow and Tyon both do break camp with the club and they can't handle it, be ready to go and make a move somewhere else for a rental. Because you just can't, if they're not good enough, they can't handle major league hitters, or, you know, their arms aren't back to 100%, they're having trouble pitching their way back in, whatever the case, you come up with a reason why. If they can't handle the major league atmosphere for the first couple months, 6 weeks, have plan B ready to go. Go out and get yourself a rental, or, you know, another J-Hap, something like that.
Huntington will find a way. Faith in Neil. Dan says, my four-man rotation for the playoffs with meshes with you guys, Cole, Frankie, J-A, and A-J. Sounds like he wants J-Hap in the three spot if they would get into the division series. But actually, because Cole would have pitched, that'd be interesting, right? You'd have games one and two in St. Louis now. It would be Liriano game one, and then who would you pitch in game two? Probably Hap, because Burnett's not been very good there.
That's what I would do.
Two lefties on the road for the first two games.
They've struggled against, oh, they haven't struggled, but the Cardinals' offensive output against lefties is near the bottom of the major leagues.
Lou says, give the Cardinals their props. They're a fundamentally sound team, guys. The Pirates' base running or lack thereof cost them a title. But, hey, 96 wins probably get you one 90% of the time.
Did you hear that soundbite from Jordy Mercer by any chance afterwards in the locker room where Mercer said he was having a conversation with Aramis Ramirez and Aramis? Like, Jordy said this sort of shaking his head and throwing his hands up to the sky while he was talking to the reporter. Aramis was regaling the younger guys with the tale of when the Cubs won the division with 93 wins. You know, they won it with like a couple days to go. And I look back, I don't see where they won it with 93 wins. I see where they won it with 85 in 2007. They got in with 85 in 2007. They won. They won the division in 2007 with 85 wins.
Wow.
They won the division with 97 wins in 2008. 2003, they won the division with 88. And in 1998, they won the division with 90. So there were three times there they won it with under 93, two of which Aram was with the Cubs that he could have been talking about. So I don't know which one Mercer was really talking about, but it did resonate. It did ring true, given their set of circumstances that, you know, the team that they just lost to is won its 100th and is finally able to celebrate down the hall for them, and here they are, you know, still worried about Jake Arrieta in the wild card game.
And the Cardinals were talking last night about how they were pushed, that they had to win 100 games before they could celebrate because of the way the Pirates pushed them.
There was an interesting group of stats yesterday. Somebody put out I think it was C.J. Nitkowski, the former big leaguer, about records in September and how they translate to success in the playoffs. Because the Pirates have had a pretty good record in September, right? I mean, that's one thing where at least you would take solace in that, even if they didn't win the division.
Eight games in a row on the road.
What's their September record? It's got to be 18 or 19 wins, right, after winning those eight in a row. The only exceptions were last year, the San Francisco Giants, one of them.
They only won 88 games last year.
Yeah, and they were 13-12 in September. They just came in kind of a malaise and then got hot and turned it on out of nowhere. And another team that wasn't really that good was the Royals last year, 15-11 in September, and then they took off. But otherwise, if you go all the way back to 2005, there were really most teams had like really good Septembers that went to the World Series. I don't know if that makes you feel better or worse about the Pirates, but I mean, at least they're sort of hot, and that has been, in historically speaking, for the most part, a good portent of things to come.
I feel good about the Pirates other than a one-game playoff. Against the Dodgers, against the Mets, I'd give them a 50-50 shot against the Cardinals in a five-game series.
It must have been 2007 that Ramirez was talking about. The Cubs won the division with 85 wins. The Brewers had 83 in second place. The Cardinals, 78. Houston, 73. Cincy, 72. And Pittsburgh was last with 68.
Wow. That's the year Clint Hurdle's Rockies went to the World Series.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
07.
God, how bad of a division. I'm so happy at that point I just tuned out of baseball to have not to have to watch that from about August on. Imagine how much bad baseball was played in that division that year.
07.
Yes.
And the Cubs were the winners?
The Cubs won, yes. That had to be the year he was talking about with Mercer. I don't know where he invented the 93 win number, but that point still comes across.
By the way, I almost forgot this, but do you remember that Charlie Morton started this year 5-0?
Not really.
He's lost five of his last six games. The Pirates' record when Morton has started this year is 14-9. The Pirates' record when Jeff Locke has started this year is 16-14. So I understand the frustration, and they're not the guys you want to hand the ball to in a must-win situation or in a really huge game. But the combined record of the Pirates on days that those two pitched this year is 30-23. That's not bad. That's damn good for your fourth and fifth starters.
Fourth and fifth starters, I would agree.
So, you know?
It's just the way they finished that has not the sour taste in people's mouths. But you're right.
Yeah, Morton's lost five of his last six decisions, and Locke lost, holy cow, one, two, three, four, five of his last six. They both lost five of their last six decisions.
Well, because of that, if Neil Huntington said in spring training next year, we're going with Charlie Morton and Jeff Locke as our fourth and fifth because Guy Junker, they were 14-9 and 16-14, and that's good enough, would you say, okay, you're right, or would you bitch about that? How dare you not spend money when, you know, because the fans won't be happy with that.
Well, if your third starter is Jay Happ behind Liriano and Cole, I'll take it.
I don't know. If you can count on Glasnow and Tyone a couple months in,
Happ
maybe.
Virtually replaces Burnett. The rest of the rotation is the same from a team that's going to win close to 100 games. How do you not take that?
Well, you don't take it because you saw them lose five of their last six to end the year, and that's the last impression of them. Unless they just need rest. They need an offseason rebound. Yeah, maybe.
Even with all the good Cardinal teams that we've seen come through, if they were to sweep, let's say that the Pittsburgh Pirates were to sweep the Reds for the last weekend here, they would have won the NL Central every year since 2005 with 99 victories. Every year since 2005, 99 would have been enough. In fact, if they split, if they take two of three against Cincy, 98 would have been enough to win the Central every year since that Cardinal team won 100 in 2005. 2004, the Cardinals won 105. 2005, they won 100. Every year since then, 98 would have been enough to win the division.
That's amazing. And yet everybody can see their...
I'll dial it up one more. 98 would have been enough to win the division every year except for those two since 98. The Astros won 102 in 98. So every year that since 95, they come out of the strike and they redid all the divisions and everything, only three times did you need 99 or more to win in the division.
And yet, for some reason, Tim, like those numbers, I sit here and can't say it's an injustice or they deserve better because of their base-running blunders, the fielding errors, losing to the teams below them in the division, losing games this week, Monday and Wednesday at home. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like they deserve better.
Oh, my God, no. No, 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 no. I mean, Ken, look at the first four innings of yesterday's first game. The first four innings of the first game of the doubleheader, you had Polanco making a base-running error. You had Marte making a base-running error. But at the same time, you had Cervelli hitting a grand slam, the guy who came in to replace Russell Martin with Chris Stewart. You had Polanco getting a big hit. You had Polanco throwing a guy out. You had good pitching from Gerrit Cole. You had a nice play from Neil Walker. I mean, it's just the first four innings were everything you needed to see about what was right and what was wrong with that baseball team. And they're doing it against the Cardinals, no less. It just slapped you in the face. Here we are. They can do all this right because they're in this position. They do all this wrong to keep them in this position of being one tick behind. You needed to watch four games in meaningless September to see the whole season. If you hadn't seen the whole year for the Pittsburgh
Pirates,
I was right,
buddy. It was a meaningless September.
Watch an hour from game one, and you saw the whole year.
Hey, what happened last night with you and Labs? You had some intel regarding Ryan Shazier coming out of last night's show.
Well, we spent so much time talking about the quarterback situation. The other injury situation that's clearly of note is Ryan Shazier, and he's out again. And I brought up that question that was asked of us on Channel 2 last week during the showdown, which was comparing him to Kendrell Bell. And I said it's an unfair comparison because at least Kendrell Bell had 1.5 good years with the Steelers. And Shazier hasn't been able to get on the field for all that. And Labs, it's one of these situations where I'm sure he's got something from the inside and he can't give it away because he's Steelers.com. You know what I mean? Okay. It's one of the advantages and disadvantages of being that close to the team. You know a lot of stuff, but you can't say it all. And he said what he could say.
Like watching a Steeler practice.
Right, precisely. He said what he could say without getting anybody in trouble. But the way he made it sound like was this was not just a stinger, but a significant nerve-related injury to Shazier's shoulder. All right? And the vibe that I got from Labs was, as is often the case with these nerve injuries, if you start to lose feeling and the feeling doesn't come back after a certain amount of time, then you start to get nervous, right? So it was getting worse as that week went along. Remember we talked about that? He was fine for one day, and then next thing you know, it's Friday's practice, and he's in a friggin' sling, and he's still in a sling on Sunday, and he's still in a sling on Monday. And apparently they were starting to get nervous, like, uh-oh, this might be a Sean Spence kind of thing. Because remember, Spence had the nerve damage along with the tears in his knee.
He didn't have any feeling in his foot.
They thought he might not be able to walk regularly again, let alone play football. So they were starting to get worried, apparently, over there, that this was a nerve-related issue of great significance. And then, as this week went along, he started to get feeling back. He started to get more sensation more often. So it looks like the nerve is healing, and he may be able to play, if not this upcoming week against San Diego, then the week after that. They are leaving the light on for him, as Tomlin likes to say, for San Diego, which is encouraging because I guess for a couple days there, in the middle of this week or so since that injury, week and a half since this injury, they were getting pretty nervous about what that could be. It wasn't just like a regular run-of-the-mill stinger. So look for him either San Diego or the week after, but it got dicey there for a bit apparently.
Which is tough. I mean, I look back at my notes from the Niners game. They're up 43-18, and that's there's 7 minutes to go in the game. Shazier's still in. I mean, you don't have enough backups to put everybody in, but he pops a guy. Patton was the receiver he hit on the out route. And that could, if that was like a career-ending injury, which sounds like it's not and everything's on trending well, that's good. Should he have even been in the game there at 43-18, should you have had your two back, should your backup inside linebacker?
Yeah, under some circumstances, I would have said yes, because you got to play somebody. But like you just said, they've got two guys in whom they have some investment, right?
Yep.
You know, they want to keep Williams, obviously. They work so hard to get Spence back on the field. Why not at that point?
I would think.
But as New England has proven to us, getting a Player of the Week honor is a very important thing. So they just wanted to ice that for Ryan Shazier.
Did he win Player of the Week that week?
He did, yes. He was Player of the Week.
Defensive player.
Remember, because that was the week where everybody who was Player of the Week was Pittsburgh-related.
And not Tom Brady-related.
Oh, that's right. So, wait, no, he didn't then. Darrell Revis beat him.
Yeah, Revis won.
You're right. Revis beat him. My mistake.
Okay. All right. That's a commercial-free hour of Sports Talk in the Books, brought to you by Duffy's Beer and by Invisible Fence Brand. Coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, Pat Bostick will join us at 11:40 to talk a little Pitt-Vaught Tech. But before we get there, we'll get some Penn stock in. A 6-goal effort on a couple of occasions allowed to Detroit here in the preseason. What does it mean? Rick Tocchet had some interesting thoughts after last night's loss that we wanted to let you hear. Also, Andrew McCutchen speaking after last night's division-clinching win for St. Louis. I think Kutch has been a good quote here of the last couple weeks about different things, and he was last night in terms of what this means. So we'll hear from McCutchen. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet. Anything else, Tim, you got in the hopper you want to?
Yeah, there's a trade rumor out there that the Penguins might be looking at when it comes to acquiring somebody on the blue line.
All right. Strike up the band, guy. We get a little hockey talk in here. The Boys of Winter theme is coming
soon. Symphony's playing at halftime tonight.
We allowed to play that one or no?
Only guy can do that with his lips. That's all we can do.
Coheed and Cambria. We're probably not allowed to play that, right?
The Morning Sports Report on Trip Live Radio
anything
is brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand. They've helped over 2 million pet owners enjoy more freedom while their yards are free of fences and pets are happy. Schedule a free in-home consultation at InvisibleFence.com. InvisibleFence.com. It's the Trip Live Radio Morning Show brought to you by Duffy's Beer with Junker, Benz, and Laird.
Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at Duffy'sBeer.com. And get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills and online at Duffy'sBeer.com.